So, good afternoon. I can hardly see you, but you can see me. I am very pleased to be here, and I hope my words of thanks do not count towards my 20 minutes. I want to thank the Haus der Kulturen, and particularly its director, and Herrn Aue, who was a wonderful coordinator. I'm a great fan of the Haus der Kulturen, I have to say, because it's more am Puls der Zeit, wie wir im Deutschen sagen, than many of our universities most of the time. They are too specialized. So I am here to report a little bit of my research, what I can do in 23 minutes or so. And as you've already heard, I am more micro-oriented, which really means I'm looking at financial markets from the inside, or rather than from a political economy perspective. Now, and I will tell you a technological story rather than an economist's story. I leave that to Phil. And the technological story is also interesting, particularly in financial markets. And it leads directly to the algorithm questions. Now, I imagine you've already heard a lot about algorithms in the news media, on TV. There are predictions. It's kind of irritating that I don't see my own PowerPoints easily. There are predictions that this unseen economy underground, which is not only based on algorithms, but also on sensors, processors, all kinds of things, will be equal in size to the physical economy and in 2025. So that's not a long time in the future. There are many earlier examples of the use of algorithms. You are familiar with them from Google, for example. But also marketing, airlines use them all the time. Financial markets are not the only place where algorithms are being used and increasingly used and massively used right now, but they are used in a very specific and interesting way. And my story is quite a bit about how did we get there? What happened in financial markets? I think that financial markets, and I should insist that I'm not talking about markets in general, but really financial markets, and particular markets within them, are interesting because they sometimes lead changes in social forms. How social groups and forms change is interesting for sociologists, and they are sometimes at the leading edge of that. Not always, but sometimes they are. And in the markets I look at, there were three distinctive stages which are characterized by different types of phenomena. The first one I call a stage of beginning temporalization. The second, synchronization, that means global synchronization with the help of technology again, but media-mediated technology, if you wish. And then the third one is changed by the invention of synthetic actors, as you might call them, but infrastructural developments also play a huge role. On the whole, I will argue that we cannot understand financial markets only in terms of capitalism moving forward and doing what it probably shouldn't be doing, but we also have to factor in the takeover by science that happens in these markets, and I will make this clearer at the end. Now, takeover by science also has a reference to us living in a knowledge society. There are various versions of knowledge society theories. One emphasizes that knowledge has become a productive force, and it's no longer labor or resources of some kind. Another theory of a knowledge society puts the emphasis on reflexive modernization. That was Giddens and Scott Lash at the King's College and others that have, back in Germany, that have emphasized how knowledge penetrates intimate relationships, child rearing, and so on, all of these things, and relieves our ontological insecurity. But the third thing I want to point to is that, at least now, we are also witnessing the creation of synthetic actors, which are sometimes robot-like, but not always robot-like, and the emergence of human algorithmic interaction, so interaction between human actors and synthetic actors, as you may call them, and that is also very much science-based. Now, the three stages in a little more detail. The first stage lasted about 100 years. As it starts with a technological invention that was very important for financial markets, the ticker. The ticker is a cross between a printer and a telegraph. So as a telegraph, it connects various places in which financial markets happen. As a printer, it churns out a ticker tape, which has market information on them. I call this a streaming technology, and you will see in a moment why. The second stage only started about in about the 1980s, and it is not over. It is with us, but it was supplemented by a different stage. And the second stage means digitalization, computers, and the respective computer infrastructure, and a move to electronic trading. I will show you that in a moment too. And the third stage is the stage of algorithms taking over in financial markets. It starts only about 2000, so there's always something earlier, but really taking off around 2005 and not finished. It's a stage that is not completed, and therefore there are many open questions how it's going to be completed. So that's an example of the ticker. You see the ticker tape here. And I have one Hollywood rendering of the ticker tape. It illustrates something very important, that the market, which was on tape now, you could see the prices, the quantities traded, and the instrument traded, for example, the stock traded on the ticker tape, just three figures, three numbers, and an alphabetical figure, became observable on the ticker tape, how it progressed and where it went and how quickly, how dynamic it was. And you can see that, we have that in interviews by a colleague of mine, which are from about 10 years ago, with people that still experienced the earlier ticker tape, not that of 1980, not that of 1886, but certainly one that was very similar some 50 years later. So why I put this up there is because you can hear them talking about the market becoming alive for them. It became a rolling thing, a process, a forceful process. And previously it hadn't been seen quite in that way because you hadn't rendered the market visible on anything. You had to go and call someone up, or you had to send a pigeon to England and the horse back to find out what was going on where. So it was a completely different geographical story, and now it is no longer a geographical story because you have the market on tape. So this is the second stage already, and it looks quite different. You still have the information that you needed about the prices and the quantities traded and all that on the computer, but you now have it on the computer. And the computer is enriched by a lot of other information that changes very, very quickly. And this situation can also be symbolized that way. And it's very interesting, I think, because you now have electronic media. I call them scopic media because they pick up what can be seen as by a scope, and they render it on screen. And at the same time, you can act through the screen, so it's very reflexive. But the screen, also in reality, of course, it's in front of everyone on the globe. But it's also, for a long while, in the same market, for example, in the foreign exchange market, the same screen they look at. And the screen is like an organizing, a collective organizing structure in the middle of the whole thing that holds it all together. sociologically speaking, it is not a bureaucracy, it is not a firm, it's not a hierarchy, it's not a state, it's none of these things holding the stuff of this market together, but it's this screen technology, screen-based technology, with traders usually having 4 to 6 screens in front of them originally, and now, as we shall see, many more and not less. And the screen integrating over time everything on its surface and in its windows, accounting capacity, news, stuff, the prices that are all important. It has conversational windows, you talk to each other through the screen, and so on and so forth. Now, all of this would need more elaboration, but in the time we have, I can't really do it, but I would like to emphasize two things, really, and that is that this transition, which is a technological transition, transforms, let's say, a pure technology like the ticker into a mediated technology. A technology is more like a media technology with these screen features and dramaturgical features. What happens is that you get a complete synchronization of the market across space. So I said already the same screen is visible in Tokyo and in London and in New York. These markets are usually happening in 3 to 5 large global cities. Also Zurich, not Frankfurt very much so. And you get that synchronization so that you see the same price across space everywhere, the same price in a market that's that spatially distributed is an achievement. It's not an automatic thing. It's a huge achievement, and it means you can no longer do arbitrage, for example, of certain kinds in these markets, because arbitrage depends on differences in price in different places, has depended on that. But you also get a trader body market synchronization. So this is the global market traveling from one time zone to the next. This is just a bit of an illustration. But trader market synchronization, by this I mean that the humans who trade these markets feel a physical connectedness to the market and a emotional connectedness to the market. In more technical terms, it's a sort of flow experience. If you know Chishen and Michali, that they are in, and as which they experience the market. But they also have an interesting specialized vocabulary for example, when the market hits them in a negative way, they have losses. They use this sexual, heavily sexually negative vocabulary to talk about it, and they seem to feel it that way. They feel it like a hit that really affects them. Now, this language, again, I can only shorten, abbreviate everything, leads me, and a lot of interviews I conducted with traders, leads me to say we need to bring in the neural level, which I cannot do here fully, but neurophysiologically speaking, we have probably 2 information processing circuits, one very implicit, the other one prefrontal and cognitive and accessible to our conscious thinking. The implicit one is not accessible, but it's much faster and more efficient if you have complex information, more than 3 items or 4 items of information to absorb and deal with, as you have in these markets. Then the tasks become implicitly embedded in your implicit processing skills. And without explaining this fully, I really went into the neurophysiological literature to look at what they know, and of course it's shifting and changing, but it's not, it's interesting. What they also suggest is that when you have the implicit system taking over, and these markets are too fast for traders to think or for us to conceive of what they are doing when they are making a decision to trade at a particular price, they are not really decision-making consciously. It's implicitly knowing what should I do. when you have this phenomenon, you also have phenomenological subtractions. So for example, the implications of what you do, the larger task, the content of a lot of things, all are not there for the trader, who have to pay attention to the price differentials. You saw how fast they are moving. So what it shows you is the importance of the human trader's capacities as a processor and the use of these processing capacities, but it also shows you the full cognitive capture of the trading mind through the market and the connection to the market. I think some of this explains at least a little bit of why we see these failures to understand between Wall Street and Main Street. Now, this is the third phase, and you can see that the screens are still there, but they have multiplied now. You don't have just four or six. You may have 16 screens. And underneath, you see a sort of symbolization of what's going on, when algorithms trade. It's servers that become important, and how these algorithms are linked with each other and in what groups they trade. Now, what is an algorithm? An algorithm is a set of instructions for accomplishing a task. It's a program. It's a tool. It can have a statistical quantitative core, but it is really a little program doing something that you would like to be done. But there's also programs that act, supported by platforms, supported by servers, supported by science, meaning they make independent decisions to act in a particular way. They are all the more independent of what they are programmed for, the more they are learning algorithms, and I think we will hear more about that. If they can learn, they may, and the financial algorithms are not quite there. They are beginning to be there, not quite there, but once they can learn from data, massive amounts of data, they will make decisions which are independent of what the programmer really can explain. So, but they are also, and that's the third thing that's important here in financial markets, interactants, meaning they can be the counterparty in trading. They are always relational in relation to someone else, to another algorithms or to another human trader, for example. And therefore, what we have to look at, and we have a lot of difficulties to look at that, is to how this interaction works. We have difficulties because we cannot observe algorithms like an ethnographer does. You have to do something else to do that. You have to simulate the situation. And this hasn't been done so far. We can only look at how the algorithms are constructed, and even that is hardly accessible to us because they are highly proprietary, cost a lot of money to create, and therefore social scientists don't easily get access. So the development of these algorithms is summarized here. They started out in financial markets by imitating humans, by doing what a human trader does routinely when they do routine tasks, for example, performing order slicing and putting a $200 million order to buy or sell, not in the market in one go, but slice it up into 10 orders for $20 million, for example. They learn to do that. A trader doesn't have to do it. It's a boring task. Algorithms learned that. Then they became more responsive. They included more randomization. They thought, if I trade 10 millions every half an hour, you know, I'm easy to find out. Others will easily decode what I'm doing. So I need to randomize my orders. Then they learned to base their responsiveness on analysis or on the conditions they found, so that they would trade 50 million or 10 million, depending on what the conditions are and what the analysis resulted in for them. Analysis means you have a second or third or other algorithms connected to the first, who is actually analyzing the situation in the market. Then they went beyond imitation, and that's where we are. We are everywhere, I should say, in financial markets. Some algorithms just do stupid tasks and serve as tools, but others based their trading responses on science much more than on what human traders do, on scientific models, many of which created in the 1970s, that are models about what goes on in financial markets. And these models are programmed into the algorithms and they become more and more reflexive, learning to read, literally interpret and read market data and react to the market data. So that's where we are right now. And of course, I said algorithms are actors or interactant in the markets. Human beings encounter them as actors. This is not a metaphor. They encounter them as people who act, who produce a particular act in relation to them. And therefore, for example, they try to cheat the algorithm. They try to find out what an algorithm does and cheat them. So it's a really an interaction system, but it's an interaction system with synthetic actors. The human actors get certain attributions and the algorithms get certain attributions in the markets. Interesting, the algorithms are always faster. The speed is their advantage, and it is the reason when you ask market participants why they are being created. They are also unemotional and scientific, but they are also dumb because they are programmed to do a particular thing and don't think outside the box so far. They don't think much outside the box so far. They are fast and cheap, and that's very seductive. So, algorithm speed, a high-frequency trading algorithm can respond to simpler types of signals in less than a millionth of a second. Less than a millionth of a second is very fast. Not all algorithms do that because there is ways of trading that are not high-frequency trading, and high-frequency trading has limits of other kinds. But speed is an advantage of high-frequency trading. Now, one thing that's interesting to observe that happened with algorithms is that we get flash crashes, very fast crashes. They look like that. You see the market going down in these curves that all point down. Here is a narrative of the first impressive flash crash we had of 2010, the Dow Jones plunging 1,000 points. $1 trillion of value erased from the U.S. stock market in minutes, all happening within 13 minutes. 20 minutes, 26 minutes recovery time. You saw the curves are going up again. So 13 minutes down, 26 minutes up. And you had a breakdown of technology at the bottom. It's not a breakdown of trading, it's a breakdown of technology. Technology could no longer keep up because the trading actually increased rather than decreasing during the crash. And there was a delay in the input that was needed to create a price and display it in these markets, and the price was wrong. So the exchanges stopped the market for a few minutes, 2 minutes or so, and then they started it up again. So what I said now is already interesting because we tend to conceive of a crash as something that a breakdown, a collapse, something disappears, it's no longer possible, the market is plummeting, it's a decline, it's a crisis, and it means panic. And indeed, when you look at what the participants in the markets felt at the time, you get this sort of language, shocking, terrifying, traumatic, gut-wrenching. You get these gut-wrenching, dramatic events. But, and it's an interesting but, any of these things I am here talking about would deserve that we look into them much more closely. The market also recovers. We have since then, since 2010, have had many flash crashes. And the interesting thing is that there seems to be nothing economically interesting happening in these crashes, because in the end, if you sit through the crash, you do not lose. The market recovers fairly quickly. And the major indexes we use, and these are analyses by financial analysts and economists who looked at the data. These are not analyses by myself, because I could not, as an observer of these markets, have all the data available. Only the SEC and others have the data available to look at these things. The phenomenon that nothing economically interesting is happening, these sorts of crises are quite different from the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009, also raises questions. It raises questions, what's actually the effect of these crashes? And you know, of course, algorithms are implicated in them, otherwise the trading would not be, the trading and recovery, breakdown and recovery would not be as fast. And what I want to suggest here is, or draw your attention to, is that the markets are also a symbol. I mean, you, of course, you know that on some level, but the traders also express it. When you ask them, what is the market for you, and expect the answer, well, a totality of other traders or something, you don't get that answer. You get the answer, I got the answer. The market is everything. It's a life form. It's a being in its own right. It's a greater being. It's not just the sum of market participants. It's not under the control of anyone. For economists, by the way, the market is also a sort of a symbol. It's a solution to many kinds of problems, environmental problems, for example, even unemployment problems. Think of what Schiller has proposed in 2008. Crises are preventable by more market, not less market, for quite a few economists. It's also not just the sum of market participants. It's also not under the control of anyone. And it's an alternative mechanism to the mechanism of the state, very often opposed to the state. It doesn't have the paternalistic associations of the state, because it's a distributed flat sort of thing. But why I'm putting this up here is to just, the market is not just an instrumental economic thing, it's also a symbol. And I think we could, I don't have a PowerPoint for that, I think. We could consider these crashes as having the effect, because when you have an experience like that, we call that a ritual, an interaction ritual in sociology. With these rituals, the outcome is that you believe in whatever is at stake is increased. You know, you believe in the market more than you believed in it before. It actually reinforces the belief that the market can recover from anything, and it might also encourage the assumption that algorithms are not so bad at all, because they cause these, co-cause, not exclusively cause these crashes, but they are also part of the recovery. And I've seen no report by scientific authorities that have investigated the financial crisis of 2010, and there were many reports in many countries that came up with the conclusion we should do away with algorithms. So actually these crashes may have the function of making the market, and particularly algorithms, more palatable. Now, so what I've done is I've talked about changes in these markets, going to a visual life market already with the ticker, then getting synchronization and globalization, a unified, scoped, not a network market. A unified market that's not a network market any longer, but requires constant observation, a regime of attention. I've talked about the temporal changes. I've actually not talked enough about the temporal changes that we get with algorithms. We get a whole new temporal vocabulary with algorithms. Why? Because they are so fast. So we get, for example, with fiber optic cable, measures of two-thirds of SOL, that means two-thirds of speed of light, is now part of our vocabulary of looking at financial markets, and also of, it should become part of our sociological vocabulary. And we have had microwave technology, which is in the making right now. 99% of the speed of light is the speed we achieve in these markets. So what interests me is that, I'm sorry, I'm not looking at this, but looking at that. So what interests me is this, you know, a constantly increasing new vocabulary that becomes part of the social world and has to do with the speed and acceleration in these markets. We've also had a lot of structural change, which I have largely ignored. My last PowerPoints are really about the knowledge dimension, particularly in this last change. What we always had in financial markets, it's wrong, but we always had. Of course, we didn't always have that, but we have it since the ticker, practically. We had analysts in these markets. Given the ticker tape, former traders started to analyze the tape, putting the numbers together differently, and they became exclusively analysts. They observed the market, looked at it, and investigated it, and produced charts from it. This is still with us. This is a technical analysis. We still have it, we do it differently. But its origin is 10 years after the ticker. Then we had fundamental analysts, origin after the last really long-lasting financial crisis in the US of the 1930s. Not now, 1930s. Analysts. All these were internally emerging knowledge workers in these markets. But now we have externally trained knowledge workers in these markets, the so-called quants. Interesting to note, the quants are not economists. They are not financial economists. They are usually physicists or mathematicians or statisticians or information scientists with additional quantitative skills. This phenomenon emerges together with the algorithms, that quants become part of these markets, and they substitute for the former traders. The human beings you have in a market when it's largely algorithmic are quants, and sometimes working in teams with programmers, specialized programmers, but sometimes the quants make their own programs. So you don't have traders as we had them in these markets anymore. In this case, one, we might hate them, but it was not an unsophisticated profession. The profession of traders, skilled traders, were highly clever people. They had to act very fast, absorb a lot of information. They are gone. They have left the markets. Algorithms trade. They do the work of traders. Now, this is more so in stock markets. It's only half so in currency markets, but it's an increasing trend so far. It may stop at some point, but it hasn't stopped yet. And then we have quants in there who are on the trading floor, and these people are not advisors, not in a separate unit, not statisticians doing their own work in a different division. They are on the trading floor and observing the algorithms, reprogramming the algorithms, and setting the algorithms loose in a particular way, meaning they're sort of meta-persons in the market. Previously, we had a flat market. Now we have that sort of within trading hierarchy of a meta-person and an infra-person, if I may choose these terms from anthropology for a moment, of a synthetic actor, an algorithm, and a meta person observing the algorithm. These 16 screens, the person you saw there, was such a meta person. And these quants are structurally coupled with the science system, meaning they have to observe also what's going on, what are the new inventions, what new statistical and mathematical tools could we use. And they are trading at the same time, but from a meta perspective. So the knowledge society, I think, has to be, the theories of a knowledge society has to be extended. We not only have knowledge society linked to theoretical knowledge, that was Daniel Bell in the 1970s saying theoretical knowledge can be used in many places and is important, we not only have it as a productive force, replacing labor and replacing other resources, we not only have knowledge in the family because we go to a psychologist to learn how to educate our children, we have in finance finance increasingly governed by what might be called an epistemic mercenary class, a class of people who are at the same time trading by governing and directing the algorithms and construing them and helping to analyze the results. So there are lots of new challenges in these markets. I can only flash this PowerPoint. For example, it's now competition over speed and not over trading strategy in many of these markets. And speed you gain by different ways, by changing the infrastructure, for example. There is also an opposition to that speed, the attempt to introduce delays. And there are interesting books about that, for example, the book Flash Boys. Let me conclude by saying what we see since the arrival of the ticker, I would say, but to say there's a one-time arrival is always historically wrong, and my colleagues will correct me, but this is the arrival of the ticker. You see an emphasis on time. You see the emergence of time spheres, really, in these markets, with temporalization, Verzeitlichung, playing a huge role. You also see on all levels what is happening is sort of happening on all levels. It's happening in the organization, this is the profession. It's also happening to the body of the actor who either becomes a robot-like creature or a creature totally attached to the market as the human traders were before. And it's happening in law. The whole thing translates into sort of systemic changes that happen three times massively in these markets. What I also want to say, the development of knowledge, if you include technology and the knowledge quants have in this area, is very important. It may play as much of a role as the development of capitalism. And we cannot explain what happens in financial markets by solely looking at the economics or political economics of capitalism. We also have to look at what happened with knowledge and technology in these markets. Thank you very much.